TED Audio Collective.
Hello, everyone, and da jia ni hao. It's Elise Hu from TED Talks Daily. The U.S. and China are the world's two global superpowers right now. But the way our two countries have addressed the same virus went in drastically different ways. In today's talk, TED's head of curation, Helen Walters, chats with the writer and publisher Huang Heng, who's considered the Oprah of China, to better understand the differences between Eastern and Western pandemic responses without judgment. And they discuss a realistic look at what's ahead for U.S.-Chinese relations. Stick around and you'll learn some cool Chinese slang, too.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City Branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hey, everyone, it's Adam Grant. I host a podcast called Rethinking, about the science of what makes us tick. This season, we're talking about navigating young adulthood with clinical psychologist Meg Jay.
If I had to pick one word that I hear from 20-somethings more than any other word in terms of where the struggles come from, it's uncertainty. And so I think just the uncertainty involved in how do you make those big life decisions, how do you take control of your life.
Find and follow Rethinking with Adam Grant wherever you're listening.
Huang, it's so good to see you. Thank you for joining us. How's your 2020 been?
My 2020 started totally normal. In January, I went to Paris, did my interview for the Fashion Week there, came back to Beijing on January 22nd. And finding things a little bit tense because there were a lot of rumors. Having lived through SARS, I wasn't that concerned. And on the 23rd, I had a friend of mine from New York come to my house who had a flu. And we had dinner together. And another friend who came, who left the next day for Australia for vacation on an airplane. So we were not taking this terribly seriously until there was a lockdown.
And we've seen that echo around the world. I think still some people find it hard to understand the magnitude of some of the measures that China took. I mean, what else are we missing about China's response in all of this?
You know, historically, we're just such a two very different countries in terms of culture and history. I mean, these are two completely different human experiences for its people. So for China, when the lockdown happens, people are okay. People are okay with it because they think that's what a good parent should do. You know, if a kid gets sick, you put him in the other room and you lock him up and make sure that the other kids don't get sick. And they expect that out of the government. But when it is outside of China from America, it becomes a huge issue of the right political thing to do and whether it's infringing on personal freedom. So the issues that you have to deal with in a democratic society are issues that one does not have to deal with in China. I have to say that there is a word in Chinese that doesn't exist in any other language. And the word is called guai. It is what you call a kid who listens to his or her parents. So I think we are very, as a people, we are very guai. We have this sort of authoritarian figure that Chinese always look up to, and they do expect the government to actually take the actions and they will deal with it. However much suffering there is, they feel that, okay, if, you know, Big Brother says that this has to be done, then it must be done. And that really defines China as a separate mentality. Chinese has a separate mentality as, say, people in Europe and America.
And that sense of collective responsibility sometimes feels kind of a little absent from this culture. At the same time, there are, I think, valid concerns around surveillance and kind of data privacy, things like that. What is the balance here, and what is the right trade-off between surveillance and freedom?
I think in the internet age, it is somewhere between China and the US. I think when you take individual freedom versus collective safety, there has to be a balance somewhere there. With surveillance, you know, the head of Baidu, Robin Li, once said the Chinese people are quite willing to give up certain individual rights in exchange for convenience. Actually, he was completely criticized on Chinese social media, but I think he is right. Chinese people are willing to give up certain rights. For example, we have Chinese mostly are very proud of the payment system we have, which is you can go anywhere just with your iPhone and pay for everything, and all they do is face scan. I think that probably freaks Americans out. You know, China right now, we're still under semi-lockdown. So if you go anywhere, there's an app where you scan and you input your mobile phone number, and the app will tell the guard at the entrance of the mall, for example, where you have been for the past 14 days. Now, when I told that to an American, she was horrified and she thought it was such an invasion of privacy. On the other hand, as someone who is Chinese and have lived in China for the past 20 years, although I understand that American mentality, I still find it, I'm Chinese enough to think, I don't mind this. And I am better, I feel safer entering the mall because everybody has been scanned. Whereas I think individual freedom as a abstract concept in a pandemic like this is actually really meaningless. So I think the West really need to move a step towards the East and to think about the collective as a whole rather than only think about oneself as an individual.
The rise of antagonistic rhetoric between the US and China is obviously troubling. And the thing is, the countries are interlinked whether people understand global supply chains or not. Where do you think we head next?
You know, this is the most horrifying thing that came out of this. The kind of nationalistic sentiments on both sides in this pandemic. Because I'm an optimist, I think what will come out of this is that both sides will realize that this is a fight that the entire human race have to do together and not apart. Despite the rhetoric, the global economy has grown to such a integration that decoupling will be extremely costly and painful for both United States and China.
It's also been interesting to me to see the criticism that China has received quite vocally. For instance, they've been criticized for downplaying the death toll, arguably. Also for trying to demonize Dr. Li, the Wuhan doctor who first kind of raised the alarm about the coronavirus. I just saw a report in the New York Times that Weibo users have been posting repeatedly on the last post of Dr. Li and kind of using this as a kind of a living memorial to him and chatting to him. And there's something like 870,000 comments and growing on that last post. Do you see a change in the media, do you see a change in the approach to Chinese leadership that actually could lead to China swinging perhaps more to the center, just as perhaps America needs to swing more towards a Chinese model?
Unfortunately, not really, because I think there is a way between authoritarian governments and its people to communicate. The night that Dr. Li died, when it was announced that he died, the Chinese social media just blew up. Even though he was unjustly treated as a whistleblower, he still went to work in the hospital and tried to save lives as a doctor. And then he died because he contracted the disease. So there was anger, frustration, and all that came out in kind of commemorating a figure that they feel that the government had wronged. The verdict and the sort of the official voice on who is Dr. Li, is he a good guy or a bad guy, completely changed 180 degrees. He went from a doctor who misbehaved to the hero who warned the people. So under authoritarian government, they still are very aware of public opinion. But on the other hand, when people complain and when they commemorate Dr. Li, do they really want to change the system? And my answer is no, because they don't like that particular decision, but they don't want to change the system. And one of the reasons is because they have never, ever known another system. This is the system they know how to work.
What is wok throwing, Huang?
Oh, wok throwing is when you blame somebody else. Basically, someone who is responsible in a slang Chinese is someone who carries a black wok. You are made to be the scapegoat for something that is bad. So basically, Trump calling it the Chinese virus, the Wuhan virus, and trying to blame the entire coronavirus pandemic on the Chinese. And then the Chinese, I think, threw the wok back at the Americans. So it was like a very funny joke on Chinese social media that wok throwing, there's a wok throwing gymnastics aerobics exercise video that went viral.
But tell us, Huang, you're also doing dances on TikTok, right?
Oh, of course. I'm doing a lot of wok-throwing aerobics on TikTok.
I mean, a potential silver lining of all of this is that it has laid bare some of the inequities, inequalities in the system, some of the broken structures that we have. And if we're smart, we can rebuild better.
Yes. I think one of the silver linings of this pandemic is that we do realize that human race have to do something together rather than to be distinguished by our race, by the color of our skin, or by our nationality, that this virus obviously is not discriminating against anyone, whether you are rich or poor, important or not important, or whatever skin color or nationality you are. So it is a time to be together rather than to try to pull the world apart and crawl back to our own nationalistic shells.
It's a beautiful sentiment. Huang Hung, thank you so much for joining us from Beijing. Stay well, please.
Thank you, Helen, and you stay well as well.
TED Talks Daily is hosted by me, Elise Hugh, and produced by TED. Theme music is from Allison Layton Brown, and our mixer is Christopher Fazy Bogan. We record the talks at TED events we host or from TEDx events, which are organized independently by volunteers all over the world. And we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or email us at podcasts@TED.com.
You're growing a business, and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate, no coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
PRX.